This is Mitch, and I'm here with Shannon Steven. And if you're really quick and you put two and two together, yes, Shannon Steven is my daughter, and she's been working with me for over 20 years, collecting payments, drawing documents, going through foreclosures, doing whatever it is that we needed to do. And she's become an expert, no doubt, over the years. So she started her own note servicing company, which only makes sense. She can do it in her sleep. The name of her note servicing company is Moat Note Servicing, LLC, and we're going to talk to her today. How you doing, Shannon?
I'm doing fantastic. And yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to get you on the line here so that we can slow you down for a minute and get you to talk to the audience about the possibility of hiring a loan servicing company or a note servicing company. So I think the first order of the day is let's define what a note servicing company. What do they do?
Well, we're going to collect your payments, track your payment history, make your deposits, track and record escrow payments received for taxes and insurance. We're going to pay your taxes and insurance for you when they come due. We're going to send out your year-end tax forms. We're going to do escrow analysis at the end of the year, and then we are going to send you a check for your principal and interest each month.
When you decided to become a note servicing company, did you just go pick a name and open up shop, or what does it take to become a note servicer?
Here in Texas, you've got to get registered with the state. It's not a difficult process. It is a time-consuming process. First you need to set up your company. Then you've got to send information to the state so they can get you set up on their website, fill out all their paperwork. You've got to get a bond, and then you kind of go back and forth with the state until they have everything on the paperwork that they want, and then finally you get approval.
So it sounds like a little bit of a bureaucracy, no doubt, huh?
It is. It's very, very simple stuff like where did you come up with your fiscal year, and then, you email them back and say, well, look at page 3 of my LLC documents. That's where I got it. It's right there on the form.
Yeah, I understand. So Moat Servicing, that's kind of an unusual name. How did you come up with the name Moat? You're talking about Moat, M-O-A-T, like the trench you dig around the castle that you fill up with water so that people can't get into your castle if the drawbridge is up. So Moat Note Servicing, I'm going to guess where you got this name from.
Well, I know a really smart guy. I call him Dad. He wrote a fantastic book called My Life in 1,000 Houses. There's a little plug there for you. In that book, there is a story or a chapter, a couple chapters, I believe, about the moat theory, which I did go back and read just the other day. But something that you have taught me all my life is if you get everything that you need to survive, your house and your car and all those things that you need, and you put it in your castle and you build a moat around it and figure out how much it takes you to keep all of that afloat. You figure out how to make that amount of passive income, build your moat around your house, and then you can go out and do whatever you want. Dream big, do things that you wouldn't have done before because you know that everything inside your castle is taken care of. That is where note servicing came from.
Well, I'm honored. The whole thing is about financial independence. Financial independence happens when your wants and your needs are exceeded by your cash flow. And so when you find out how much it takes to pay for your wants and your needs, and then you figure out how to buy the houses or buy the investments that pay for that exact amount or more, then you become financially free. And when a person is financially free, then they can run out into the world and fail as much as they want to and come back inside that moat and not go under, not sink, and be able to rest and recuperate and then live to go out and try again. And, the theory is that at some point you go out and you try and you don't fail and you hit it big, and now you're not only financially free, but you're wealthy. So part of this is, learning to do what you do best and to delegate things that are not in your wheelhouse or that you're not good at or that you don't like, or that simply don't make you the maximum amount of return for your time. So we'll be talking about how note servicing can help you accomplish a small piece of that or part of that puzzle. How long have you been in business there, Shannon?
Well, I haven't been in business too long, a little bit less than a year, but I, as you said earlier, have been working for you for the last 20 years doing collections on our owner finance home. So I would say that Moat Note Servicing Business has been in business less than a year, but I have been in business for more than 20 years. I had so many people, you know, that we do business with asking me to collect payments for them, and I kept saying, no, I can't do it, I can't do it, I'm not registered with the state. And finally I just said, you know what, I'm going to look into getting registered with the state because I'm tired of telling everybody no. So I looked into it and got it done, and here we are.
Well, and I'm glad you did, because you're really good at it, and you've been doing it for a long time, and it only makes sense, right? You've lived it for 20 years. I'm glad that you're doing it. Actually, proud of you for doing it. So who needs a note servicing company?
Well, anyone that would rather spend their time out growing their business, we do all of these things for you so that you can go out there and make more money and make more notes, make you more money, make us more money. You know, we're specializing in servicing for investors that are doing owner financing. So the more that they can get out there and find more houses and find more buyers, you know, and the less time they're spending posting payments and sending collection letters and doing tax forms, the more time they have out there, you know, to get out there and make some more money.
So it's kind of the Kiyosaki theory of work on your business instead of in your business. This is a part of your business that you can delegate. And so unless you just really enjoy this part or for some reason think this is where the money's made, I've been in the note creation business for over 20 years, and I know where I make my money. I believe where I make my money is going out with contracts to sign up sellers to sell me their house at discounted prices. That's where I make my money. I don't make my money collecting payments. Not to say that it's not an integral or important part of the business, because it certainly is. If you have a bunch of payments that you're supposed to collect and you don't call these people the day or the day after they're due, if you don't send them letters and let them know that you know they're late and you're expecting them to pay the payment immediately, then you're training them to not pay you. So you can either train these people to pay you, or you can train them not to pay you on time. And so we just start from the very beginning training people how we expect to get paid. And we expect to get paid on the date that it's due. And we also expect to get a late fee if you don't honor your agreement with us. And we don't let people slide on late fees, because that's part of the training. A lot of us learn all kinds of things in life from pain. Late fees are painful, and people don't like them, and they quit being late. And so I think that especially when you're young in the business, you need to delegate as much as you can, because you're wearing a lot of hats, a lot of hats. I think about all there is to do in the house flipping or the owner financing business. I mean, you have to be the advertiser, the bookkeeper, the accountant, the collector, you have to service your own loans. You have to be the seller. You have to be the private money finder. You have to be the loan, you know, you have to find the funds to buy this house. There's so many hats. So when you find a particular segment that you can delegate out for a reasonable fee or for a reasonable expense, then you need to strongly consider doing that. Because where you make your money is buying houses. You've heard it said, you make your money when you buy.
Over the years, I've also, you know, you mentioned new people that are new getting into it. Another hard part, I think, for people that are new when it comes to collections is their skin hasn't gotten thick enough yet, and they try to work with these people because they hear these sob stories of, you know, my kid was sick or whatever, and then, you know, eventually when you do it for long enough, you realize half of the time the people are lying to you. I've seen all these people get themselves into a place where they're like, well, I felt really bad, and now they're 5 months behind. Well, if you bring your stuff to us, we've heard all the stories, and we know how, you know, we're not heartless, but the bottom line is that the mortgage payment needs to get paid. So when they give you their story, you know, we need to say, I'm really sorry that's happening to you, but when are you going to make your payment?
Yeah, I've seen that a lot too. They fall for old tricks that we quit falling for a long time ago. But here's a neat thing. When you hire a note servicing company, or when you hire someone to put between you as the owner of the note, and you put someone between you and the payer of the note, the person in the middle does not have the authority, no matter how sad or treacherous their excuse is, the person in the middle, i.e. note servicing, they don't have the authority to waive the payment. They simply don't. They're just a service that's put in place to collect the payment and to send out the late notices and the fees. And that's one of the things that you could shelter yourself from by hiring a collection company or a note servicing company or a loan servicing company, is get away from having to hear those excuses and having to make decisions like that. Turn it over to a company that simply says, you know, we're really sorry that's happening to you, but my job is to collect this payment, and I don't have the right to waive it or to waive the late fees or anything. I need to collect the payment. I need to collect the late fees. And, you know, this is a lot of mental stress for certain personality types. I was one of them. I'm a very compassionate person. You know, I was feeling sorry for all these people. Well, here's the thing. If enough people don't make their payments, then I can't make my payments, and my family goes out in the street. So I need to collect my payments. That's what they agreed to do. You agreed to give them a house. You did. They agreed to make their payments on time. And if they don't, they agreed to make the payment and make a late fee or give you back your house. And so that's the rules we play by. We're going to do exactly what everyone's – we're going to expect people to do exactly what they said they were going to do. What services can you expect while we're on the subject, Shannon? What services can you expect from note servicing in regards to slow payers? You listed a bunch of things you'll do for your clients, but that was kind of like the standard task. But what happens when payers get behind? How far do you go for your clients?
Well, I'm sure that most people know that, you know, with the new laws and stuff, obviously it makes it more difficult for people that are doing owner financing. There's a new law in the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act that says that you cannot file any type of foreclosure on your borrower until they have been in default for 120 days or more. So if your client misses their very first payment, you're 4 months before you can foreclose on them. So the minute that a client is 1 day late on the very first, you know, maybe it's not their first payment, but the first time is not here on the first, we will send that. And there's a form that our attorney sent us that said, you know, this is the best way to do it. Send them a letter that says, we're notifying you that you're in default. So that letter is going to go out when I don't have a payment at the end of the day on the first, so that clock starts to tick. The rules say once in default, always in default. So if you do that the very first time, they're 1 day late, they're always in default. So then that clock starts ticking. So let's say they pay the next 2 years on time and then they get behind again. Then you don't have to wait out that 120 days again. They're already in default because they were in default 2 years ago. So we'll get those out right away. That's, you know, just on the first time they're late. It's not something that you have to continue to send out. And then we send letters out on the 2nd, the 15th, and the 25th. So they're going to get, you know, on the 2nd, they're going to get a friendly reminder. Hey, your payment's due. We haven't seen it. Maybe it crossed in the mail. Just a reminder. On the 15th, it's going to be a little bit stronger. You know, your payment's, you know, seriously past due now. We need to get your payment in. The one on the 25th is going to say, if we don't have your payment in 10 days, we're going to start foreclosure. At that point, now, I do not handle foreclosures because foreclosures are different in all states. So at that point, you know, I would go to my client and say, hey, you know, they're more than 30 days late. Do you want me to work with them? And, you know, it's going to depend if they've called or whatever. Do you want me to work with them or do you want me to send the information over to your attorney so you can start foreclosure? And at that point, it would be their choice what way they wanted to go with that.
You've done your job and put pressure on them up through the first 30 days, which is super important, especially in a young relationship between the collector and the payer. You got to set your standards right from the very beginning. And I also think it's really neat that, you know, you can go out and you can study all these laws and you can learn how to do this. And you can get all the different kinds of notices typed up and ready to go. or you can just hire a company that already knows how to do this and get on with the business of finding houses and buying houses. And that's where I think the theme is over and over again is you should contemplate heavily delegating as much as you can. And this is certainly a task that can be delegated. You talked about escrowing taxes, and I guess you also escrow insurance, because if you're doing owner financed houses, it's my understanding that from Dodd-Frank and everything that you have to collect the taxes in the insurance. You have to escrow it in the payment. So talk to me about that, Shannon. How much do we need to escrow? What does it mean? What is escrow? Touch this subject and tell us how you handle escrow.
So escrow is, it's basically a savings account. So they just call it an escrow account. So your borrower is going to pay 1/12 of their taxes and one-twelfth of their insurance into an escrow account, which is a savings account that you're going to, or not you, I am going to put aside into a separate account so that when those bills come due, that money is just sitting there waiting to get paid out.
I'd like to jump in right here. Note servicers, loan servicers have to have a separate escrow account to put these funds into. It can't be commingled with their business accounts or any other accounts. It's simply a savings account that's set aside so that every time your payer sends in a check that includes principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, that the portion for the taxes and the portion for the insurance is set aside in a separate non-business account. It's just an account waiting to pay for these people's bills at the end of the year. Am I correct?
That is correct. Now, the only thing is it does not have to be a savings account. Mine is a checking account because when those bills are due, I need to be able to write checks out of that account to pay those bills. For example, Note Servicing has a main operating account. That's a checking account, and then it's got a Moat Note Servicing escrow account, and twice a month on the 15th and at the end of the month, we'll take all of, we can, you know, run reports how much escrow have you collected, and we will transfer all of that money over to twice a month to the escrow account, and it just sits there.
Okay. Yeah, it sits there and waits till it's time for you to pay for their next insurance policy or pay off their yearly property tax bill, right?
That's right. The big thing, and here's where we need a little bit of help from our client. So, and just so you know, when I say client would mean the person that hired me to collect for them, and then borrower, of course, is the person that borrows. So that's kind of the terms that I'm using. So when the property closes, we need our client to have us added onto the insurance as a non-financial third party. There's several different ways that it can be said, but we need them to get us added onto that insurance so that when the insurance is due, we get the bill. If we don't get the bill, we can't pay it. So that's one big thing. The other thing is on the taxes, we need them to call their tax office and get our address put on there so that we get the tax bills.
So it's just easy. Keep forwarding mail and everything.
Right. And, and if you forget or then, we can't pay bills if we don't have them. Of course, we're going to keep track of them and we can start, hey, I haven't gotten your tax bill or, hopefully those tax bills are online. We could pull them up. But it makes it a lot better, a lot more smooth for everybody if we just get those addresses changed. And it's real easy. A lot of times you can do it online, or you can shoot an email to the insurance agent and just say, add this person as a non-financial third party or a servicing company or, whatever that insurance company is calling it, an additional insured, an additional mortgagee, they all call it kind of different things. So, but that way they'll send us the renewal bill. I think the original question was, go ahead.
So how much, when someone first signs up, do you have escrow requirements? Like how much, when someone just signs a note over to you, how much prepaid taxes and prepaid insurance do you require?
Okay, there's not a real simple answer. So we actually have come up with a spreadsheet that we send out to everybody. In Texas, taxes are due at the end of the year. So But in Florida, I think they're doing in June or July, and Alabama, they're doing, you know, October. So that escrow chart is going to say, you know, if you close in this month and their first payment is due, if the taxes are due in this month and their first payment is due in this month, you can kind of follow the chart over and it'll tell you how many months of escrow to collect. The easy answer is you need to collect the number of payments since your taxes were due. So let's use Texas for example. So taxes were due in January, but essentially the end of December. So you're going to need to collect January, February, March, April, May, and now June, because your borrower is probably not going to make their first payment until July at this point, plus 2 months. We always keep 2 months of reserves. I think it's debatable whether that is required or not. We have been told that it is required, and so that's what we're going to do. So it's the number of months plus 2 months. So in Texas, 6 months plus 2 months. So that's what you would need to collect at closing. And then as far as the insurance, we just require 2 months because they're going to pay their first year up front.
I don't want people to get confused with this. This is just part of the service that they'll handle, and you'll send them the chart. You'll talk to them about each individual house, and you'll help them get through this part. So,
And that really is one of the biggest questions that I have is, How do we know how much escrow? And I say, give me 1 minute, and I will send you an email with the chart.
Okay, so I've had this question before. Do you report to credit bureaus? And so let's do the short answer here. I mean, we could talk a long time about why, but do you report to credit bureaus?
We do not report to credit bureaus. You know, the people that we deal with, these investors, are in the business of collection, not because they want these people to go out and refinance their houses. So we don't report to credit. At some point, if I had enough people that wanted that, it's something that I would consider. But it's not something I'm even considering at this point.
Yeah, because people like me, I want to collect payments for years and years and years.
For 30 years.
Yeah, I'm actually disheartened when someone says, hey, I'm going to refinance my house and pay you off. It's like, well, now I got to go find another house to buy with this money. So it doesn't bother me that you don't report to the bureaus. But if someone called you for a reference to say how they paid, you would have their complete payment history, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, I tell people if they need it, they can send me a form called a verification of mortgage, and I'd be more than happy to fill those out. It just, you know, it's showing their payment history. It's just not on their credit report. And most, I think most places accept those these days. They're not just looking at the credit report anymore.
Yeah, because there's a lot of owner financing going on these days, a lot more than there used to, because banks have gotten so tight and people's credit has gotten so much less than what's required because of a lot of the economic debacles that we've been having over the past
few decades. And I would say 95% of those people owner financing aren't reporting to credit.
Yeah, I understand.
I would almost prefer to say 100%.
Yeah. Hey, talk to me about what you charge for this service to collect my notes. What do you charge?
It's $35 a month, and then we keep any late fees that we collect just to cover the cost of our time and to send out these letters and make these phone calls and all of that good stuff. And that's really it for the monthly charge. There is a setup fee, $100 per file setup fee. Both of those with volume would be lowered. So, you know, if you brought me 20 notes, I'm not going to charge you $100 per file setup fee. So we would, you know, work out some sort of a reduced rate for the setup fee and also for the monthly collection fees with volume brought in.
Okay, so I wanted to point out to the people that everyone knows that you can collect principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, but not everyone knows that you're allowed to collect from your payer principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and servicing fee. I learned this a long time ago, and I've been collecting principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and servicing fee for many years. And what this does is it allows me to add the $35 a month that I need to pay note servicing in this example. I collect it from my payer. Now, I have instances where my payer can't afford the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance plus $35 per month for the servicing fee, but they can't afford $20 a month for the servicing fee to be added onto their bill. So in that case, I'll collect $20 from them and I pay $15 out of my pocket. But if you start to work the numbers on this, if you're owner financing houses and you have the chance from the very beginning to dictate that you're going to collect principal, interest, taxes, and insurance plus the note servicing fee, then think of how much that could add to your bottom line or how much workload that could take off you, and you're not even have to pay for it or not having to pay for all of it. So I want you to strongly consider, if you're in the owner finance business and you're creating notes and owner financing your buyers, strongly consider adding the note servicing fee in with the rest of their payment, and that will go a long way to offsetting your expenses, if not completely offsetting your expenses. And you would put in your, I would put in my notes that the principal, interest, the taxes, the insurance, and then I'm allowed to collect an additional note servicing fee up to $60 a month. However, I'll just pass along the fee, whatever it is. And in this case, your fee would be $35 a month. And you talked about the setup fees and being negotiable for volume. I think that's good. If someone signs up with, how long is their commitment?
Let me go back to the setup fee real quick just for a second. I've also had several clients that have charged that setup fee as a closing cost on the closing statement to their buyer. So, and they're collecting the $35 a month. So they are $0 out of pocket for the whole thing.
That's
something that you can, if it allows for it, you know, we all know in the owner finance business, you have to finagle closing costs and stuff sometimes because they only have so much money that they can bring in. But if it works, that is also a fee that can be charged to them at closing.
All right, that's fantastic. I didn't think of that. So I'm glad you brought that up. So you can add the setup fee into the closing cost. Okay, so Shannon, if I say, you know, I've got five notes here and I want you to start collecting on these five notes, how long is my commitment?
You know, we don't do contracts. We're firm believers that if you're not happy, we don't want to make you stay. We're very confident that you will be happy with the service, so we're not gonna lock you into something. If, you know, your life circumstances change or you're not happy with the service, then we just require a 60-day notice to terminate.
Yeah, that'll give you enough time to get everything together that you need to hand back to them anyway. But I think that's a good policy. If you're not happy, you know, there's no problem. So explain to me the process. I say I'm all in, okay. I love your program, Shannon. What do I physically have to do to get started? I mean, do I have to fill out some forms? What?
Yeah, it's real simple. We have an intake form that's, you know, really just basic information on the client, the information on the borrower, you know, things like for the client, like where do you want us to mail your check to and how do you want us to make it out? Basic information on the borrower, name, obviously the property address, social, things like that, so we can do tax forms. It's a two-page form. The first page, first three-quarters of the page actually gets filled out. The second page is really just some bullet points on things that we do and don't do, what the fees are, and then kind of a breakdown of the money that you're sending. Sometimes we'll get a check in and it's difficult to figure out, like, okay, what portion of this is taxes, what's insurance, what's fees, you know, all of that good stuff. So we just ask you to kind of break that down for us. So you're just going to send that in along with copies of your closing documents. Now, we don't necessarily need all of your closing documents, but sometimes it's easier for people to just throw the whole package in the copier and send the whole thing, and then we can kind of weed out what we need and don't need. But basically, we need, you know, their application, so we have all their information, the note, we like to have a copy of the note and the deed of trust, the closing statement, their insurance. So it's just some of the basic forms, and then your check for the escrows and the setup fee. So the setup fee gets paid up front with the escrow deposit, and that's really it. And we, you know, we'll get all of that documents, we'll get it into the computer, and we immediately will send out a notification letter to the borrower, just kind of a welcome letter saying, we're going to be your servicing company and we look forward to working with you, and here's all of our information if you need to contact us. It's a real, real simple process to get started once we get all your questions answered.
All right, and where are you located at?
I am physically in San Antonio, but we can collect, you know, in any state. The rules are pretty standard across the board. Like I said, until it comes to foreclosure, earlier I said until it comes to foreclosure, and that's kind of why we don't do the foreclosure part, but we will get any information. And that's actually one of the questions on the intake form as well. Who is your attorney? What's their contact information? That way, if the client does choose to send it to foreclosure, we have all of that stuff and we can get all the documentation together and get it over to that attorney as quickly as possible and get that process started.
I think we've covered pretty much of the details. Can you think of anything else we've left out or anything else you'd want to comment on?
One thing is I have a lot of people asking me about underlying loans, if we handle their underlying loans from their private investors or bank. We do not handle that. So, you know, we will accept the payment from your borrower and we will forward that on to you.
You're saying you don't make payments for your clients. Like if your client owes some money to a lender, you collect the money from
Correct.
Their payer. You don't write checks to make their payments. That would be kind of problematic, wouldn't it? Because you could only make a payment if you collected a payment, and sometimes you don't
right.
collect the
and
payment.
Then it could, right, and then it, you know, then it ends up putting them in a bad place with their bank or their private lender. So we leave that task to them to make sure, you know, like for us in our business, it doesn't matter if we're getting payments or not. Our lenders are getting their checks, period.
On time.
And on time. And, as the servicer, I can only pay them if I get paid. So that's something we leave to handle it.
So another,
right.
That's
right.
another fact, but it's delegated to your bookkeeper if you're not doing, you know, if you don't want to do it yourself. Okay, Shannon, I really appreciate you. I think we've covered everything. If anyone has any questions, how do they get a hold of you at Moat Note Servicing LLC?
Well, they can go to the website, which is www.moatnoteservicing.com. Borrowers will be able to make their payments on that website. You can email me at Shannon, Shannon, at moatnoteservicing.com, or you can give me a call at 210-504-8878, and I will answer any questions you have. I think probably the best way would be email, because it's real, you know, I sit in front of it all day. So it's real easy for me to, you know, answer any questions that you have on there. But if it's something we need to talk about, feel free to give me a call.
Okay, so that's your email address again is Shannon at moatnoteservicing.com. And you spell moat, you guys, M-O-A-T, just for the record, if it's not someplace you can see it. Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-O-N at moatnoteservicing.com. Phone number 210-504-8878. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Shannon. Thanks for the information. I think you've done a great job of letting people know what Moat Note Servicing will do for them. I guess we're out. Have a good rest of the day, and it's been a pleasure.
Great. Thanks for having me.